This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. There is fear, and there is politics, and there is the politics of fear. And this week we were inundated with all three. You may find this hard to believe, but aside from disclosing our own views to you, because you should have that information when considering our coverage, we work pretty hard not to flog them. That's because, believe it or not, we are more interested in seeing how things work than in preaching.
So at our Monday editorial meeting, we were talking about the situation in Paris and how we can look at it and what's the meaning of 9/11 as a metaphor and what is the meaning of boots on the ground and why is it used so often?
And I said, I have something to propose that is a little less semiotic in nature. I saw a cartoon in the Daily Mail. Syrian refugees in Bedouin clothing and sandals storming the borders of the EU with rats at their feet. Rats! It was just pure naked racism, like something out of Der Stürmer. And then, as I watched the news, I kept having that same feeling. Is this really where we are in 2015?
Because now we've got Donald Trump saying we should issue American Muslims IDs and track them on databases. We have Ben Carson saying Muslims should be barred from the presidency. And Ted Cruz saying that Muslim refugees should be barred from our borders and smoked out with a religion test. And Chris Christie saying that no one is too young to pose a threat.
The fact is that we need appropriate vetting, and I don't think orphans under five should be admitted into the United States at this point.
Yes, they're all Republicans. But John McCain pushed back on those ideas while the Democratic mayor of Roanoke, Virginia, was busy praising FDR's infamous Japanese internment camps, which Republican Ronald Reagan eventually apologized for. And then on Thursday, 47 House Democrats helped pass a veto-proof bill to tighten the already strict requirements for the settlement of future refugees here. So this is, to a degree, a bipartisan reversion to paranoia.
It's an old story and a familiar one to anyone with a historical memory. Here's New York Congressman Gerald Nadler this week on WNYC.
If it weren't for the anti-Semitic, xenophobic 1924 Immigration Act, passed by an anti-Semitic xenophobic Congress, maybe 2 million of the 6 million Jews who died in the Holocaust would have been in New York instead, would have been in the United States instead. We shut our doors to people in need when they were Jewish. We can't do that again.
But we don't have to go back to the Second World War. We experienced the same panic, the same reflex, back after 2001. And Mark Lynch, professor of political science and international affairs at George Washington University, says we learned from it. We really did. And we recovered our nerve for a while.
We seem to have gone right past almost a decade of growth where we learned a lot of lessons, and we seem in many ways to be right back where we started, asking many of the same questions about what is the relationship between Islam and terrorism? Is it possible to have coexistence between Islam and the West? What I've been calling the endless recurrence of the clash of civilizations.
You suggest that maybe this post-Paris moment is worse than the post 9/11 one.
In some ways, it is worse because we have all of that history behind us. But at the same time, the kinds of ideas that you're seeing espoused by presidential candidates right now are the sorts of things that you would have seen on obscure right-wing blogs 12 years ago, and now they're being taken seriously on the op-ed pages. The idea that you would have a religious test for Syrian refugees to let Christians but not Muslims in, or that you would create a national registry to track Muslims or to shut down mosques, I mean, these are radical fringe ideas, and yet they've insinuated themselves into the mainstream. One of the things which is very interesting is that after 9/11, the Bush administration was actually very, very good at insisting repeatedly and publicly that America was not at war with Islam.
Actually, we have a clip of that from September 17th, 2001.
The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace. These terrorists don't represent peace. They represent evil and war.
He always pushed for this idea that Al-Qaeda was a marginal extremist group that was at war with the mainstream of Islam. And that was both, in my opinion, right, but also it was a very powerful message to the American body politic. After 9/11, the Bush administration served in many ways as a firewall against the spread of these really extreme ideas, because this popular Republican president was saying very clearly that Islam is part of America and that we are not at war with Islam.
Bush went to mosques. He hosted dinners. He stayed in touch with the community.
Exactly. When President Obama says more or less the exact same thing, it doesn't resonate in the same way. You know, the Republican Party seems to be in a very different place right now, 8 years or 7 years of the Obama administration and the evolution of the nature of the Republican Party.
I would say it's because of this election, because it always dumbs down the rhetoric.
Every election cycle tends to do that. But I think you have the combination of that, along with things that are actually happening over in the Middle East. They resonate with each other. Those horrifying videos of the beheadings of the American journalists, or when they burned the Jordanian pilot alive in a cage. These atrocities were some of the most watched news events of the entire year, and that really imprinted itself upon the consciousness.
Let's talk now about how that caused a lot of the evolution in our thinking to unravel over the last decade.
There's a number of questions which seem to have been resolved and that have now been reopened. So, for example, the idea that Islam is inherently violent or inherently hostile to Western values. This was debated back in the early 2000s and then largely resolved. And now a lot of those ideas are back.
We've got a clip of Republican candidate Marco Rubio on ABC reacting to Hillary Clinton's refusal to use the phrase radical Islam as what we're warring against during last Saturday's presidential debate.
That would be like saying we weren't at war with Nazis because we were afraid to offend some Germans who may have been members of the Nazi Party but weren't violent themselves.
I think that these kinds of rhetorical flourishes are just extremely dangerous.
Let me understand why it's dangerous. Is it because he's using the word Islam? Because he is qualifying it by radical.
If you're looking at groups like Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State, they have a vision of a world which is divided between Islam and not Islam. They believe that it is basically not only impossible, but fundamentally wrong to have coexistence. The problem is that the overwhelming majority of the Muslims of the world don't agree with them. So their use of terrorism, their use of social media is designed to make it impossible for a Muslim to live in the West. And so I think we've seen, as a question of strategy for quite some time, the need to draw that sharp distinction and to say the jihadists, they're wrong. Actually, Islam is compatible with the West, to kind of isolate them and marginalize them. The dangers with this mainstreaming of the ideas about a war on radical Islam is that it creates then this slippery slope towards affirming the ideology that Al-Qaeda is espousing, basically saying, yeah, you're right. You can't coexist. That is the true Islam. That's what makes it so dangerous.
I think that it would be a lot easier for people to understand why using the phrase radical Islam doesn't work is if you replaced it with radical Christianity.
You know, a few months ago, I was asked to testify to the House Armed Services Committee about how to combat the Islamic State. And this was just a few days after the murder of several young American Muslims down in North Carolina. At the time, what I said was it was so important that our discussions about American Muslims focus on people like them, wonderful young people who were raising money for Syrian refugees, living these lives full of hope, rather than on ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. And in the days after that, a clip of my talk apparently went viral, and I received hundreds, if not thousands, of emails from American Muslims saying thank you because they feel so under siege in this political and media environment. This is just one very small thing, but to me, it's emblematic of how much things seem to have changed. And I would just like to see the media and politicians, even academics like myself, avoiding the easy rhetoric and trying to keep that sense of what holds us together. But right now, everything seems to be pulling us apart instead.
Is there something about the news media today, as opposed to 14 years ago, that enables this kind of backsliding?
You know, I think there is. And I think you really see the cultivation of these more extremist types of views nurtured and shaped within these very insular online communities of the like-minded. And then those now bleed very effortlessly up into the broadcast media. And now the news, the opinion, the flow of images and information, so much of it goes through social media first, and then it's reflected back out from the broadcast media.
I think you're right. I mean, go back to the period immediately after 9/11 and for years thereafter. There was this huge rumbling up from some precincts of the internet that persists that says we bombed ourselves on 9/11. I don't know that that idea ever made it into mainstream news.
But today it probably would. It would become this idea that was circulating, which was retweeted thousands of times, which would be picked up by a cable news host. It would be reported, and then suddenly those ideas, they've jumped from that little community into the national discourse. And I think we see a lot of that these days.
What is the rhetorical blast from the past that bothers you the most?
I think the worst of these zombie ideas shuffling back from their grave is this idea of a clash of civilizations, that the real problem is Islam, and that there's this fundamental divide between Muslims and the rest of us, partly analytically because it's not right, and we know how many divisions there are within the Muslim world. It's also strategically important, I think, to recognize that the jihadists are a tiny minority, and you don't want to give them the power that they seek by anointing them the spokesman of an authentic Islam. For me, though, it's also kind of a human issue. I mean, the vast majority of the Muslims of the world, they're just ordinary people. They're living lives. They have jobs. They have families. And in a sense, this idea of a clash of civilizations, it just wipes them off the map, right? It denies their entire existence. And to be honest, I have a very difficult time wrapping my head around the idea that so many people believe this to be true when everything in my experience says that it's not.
Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Mark Lynch is a professor of political science and international affairs at George Washington University and contributing editor to the Washington Post blog, The Monkey Cage.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Alex Friedland and Dasha Lizitsina, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Casey Means.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.